Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Joining us on the line this morning for the Israel Report, Raleigh Marks. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Always a pleasure to talk to you on a Friday morning. We're filled with coffee. We're filled with news. It's been a long week. And before we head into the weekend.
Right, and we have a long weekend here in South Africa as well, which is lovely. Of course, I'll be here at 6 o'clock Monday morning in studio, but for the rest of you, they can lie in bed and listen to me. So look, it actually sounds terrible, but anyway, on their part, nobody should have to do that. But never mind that. Let's talk about the Meshi Zahav news.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's, you know, since we spoke about the scandal last week, it's been a week of just day by day, more and more news is breaking. And this follows the news breaking last week that Yehuda Meshi Zahav, the co-founder and chairman of Zaka, the emergency services rescue organization, is being investigated for several counts of alleged sexual assault and rape over a 40-year period. What makes this case particularly interesting is that the 40-year period kind of ended in 2011, and that some of the testimony might be out of the statute of limitations. And again, I want to make a big distinction between a person and an organization, and of course everybody has to be given the benefit of the doubt until they get to a court of law. But news breaking just 2 days ago that a man in his 40s had filed a charge which they can't investigate because of the statute of limitations, but it could bolster any evidence given in court. And now we have news of another person, at this time a woman in her 40s, who has been the latest to make allegations of sexual abuse against Yehuda Meshi Zahav. So this is a case that's really gaining momentum day after day.
Yeah, very, very, very sad story indeed. And of course, exactly as you say, we interviewed Zaka this week because they're launching the most incredible campaign in South Africa about awareness in terms of fire, what to do, how to look after yourselves, particularly over Jewish festivals where we often do, unfortunately, have some of these accidents taking place. So a phenomenal, phenomenal organization. And of course, the sad thing is that the organization will be put to a test over this. That is what happens. They might not have chosen it, but they're going to have to choose how they deal with it. And if they have to be very, very careful in terms of reaching that balance. Not going to be easy at all. The good news, of course, is that more restrictions have been lifted in Israel as Israel returns to some form of normalcy.
Well, this is it, that we are day by day lifting more and more restrictions and opening up the economy more and more. This is as our positive test rate drops to about 2% and the transmission rate also drops significantly, and we continue to lead with the vaccination rollout. It really has been an absolutely extraordinary effort by the government, the health ministry, the army, because the army is involved with the vaccinating citizens. Really, really amazing effort. What I did find funny, Howard, was that people have approached the coronavirus chief and said to him, please, can you put some restrictions in place for Pesach because we really don't want to host people.
I saw that. I thought that's got to be the best story in the world. Going to the guy that heads up COVID-19, the whole policy, and saying, you know, can't you put restrictions on because we just don't want to entertain so much. I love that. I absolutely love it. I think it is so smart.
You've got to love Israeli chutzpah. Hey, you know what? We are opportunistic people, and where we see an opportunity to get out of, you know, washing dishes and having to cook so much, we're going to take that. Yeah. But we woke up this morning to news that more restrictions are being lifted. that we will have increased capacity in sporting and cultural venues, and that while we might have some rules over gatherings during Pesach and also upcoming Easter and Ramadan, it won't be as stringent as it was before. But you can actually start to feel that the country is starting to get back to normal. People are getting more uptight about the traffic on the roads. There was a discussion earlier this week that perhaps by next month, wearing your mask outdoors might be lifted. So, as we say, le'at le'at mitkadmim, slowly, we are moving forward.
To some extent, it might be a bit of a false reality. And the reason that I'm saying that is because Israel has been quite firmly shut in terms of foreigners coming into the country. Obviously, we know that Israelis have been allowed to return for the election that's taking place, specifically because there's an election next week. But the reality is once everything opens up again, it's going to be much harder, I believe, to maintain whatever is Israel's moving towards at the moment, even though the citizens, of course, have been vaccinated largely. Is this a concern for people?
People are concerned. The Supreme Court ruled this week that the airport has to be fully opened on a Saturday, and it's a bit nebulous whether it means to people from all countries or just to returning Israelis, because we do have the election on Tuesday. What they are trying to do now is cap the amount of people coming in from foreign countries to about 3,000 per day. And there is a sense of concern that people coming in could be not vaccinated or could be bringing in variants. And, what could this mean for us opening up? But what we are trying to do is, or at least El Al is trying to run a pilot where they have rapid corona testing before anybody gets on a flight, and trying to control the who comes in a little bit more tight, or as much as we possibly can. But having said that, we still have to wake up our travel and tourism industry, which is an industry, as many around the world have noted, has probably been one of the hardest hit. Earlier this week, we had the news that Israel will quarantine and vaccinate 700 Jordanians who work in and around Eilat, in the hotels, in the restaurants. That border has been closed so that they can come in, so that we can get them working again, so that we can start opening up Eilat for tourism again.
Yeah, let's just talk about the election. I mean, I really don't want to, just because I'm so bored and I feel like saying, come back to us when you've got a cabinet. But we really do have to. It's not responsible not to. Is there any expectation that this is going to yield a different outcome than how, is this number three or four? I can't even remember.
This is number four. And if you speak to Israelis, we're pretty much gearing for number five. There is, unless an absolute miracle happens, it is the month of Nisan, Howard. Mm-hmm, so, anything mm-hmm. is possible.
Yes.
Unless an absolute miracle happens, we are not expecting to break the deadlock. We're expecting to be in a position that we were, where there's an absolute battle to form a coalition. Because remember, it's not about just who wins the election. It's about whether or not that person is able to form a coalition. And we've had some interesting rhetoric coming out this week. Gideon Sa'ar, who is the defector from the Likud, he was the man that many tipped to be the successor of Netanyahu. He broke away. He's founded the New Hope Party. He said earlier this week that if Netanyahu doesn't win, that he must step down from politics. He must, enough's enough. There needs to be fresh momentum. We had somebody else saying to Netanyahu, that if you don't win, you're going to have to go. And Netanyahu saying, what am I going to do? Cry about it.
Which oh, my gosh.
An Israeli
and so mature.
It's so much. I mean, we've even had, I mean, this is just absolutely, I don't know if it's an indication of where we are culturally or what it is, but there were debates between the leaders of Likud and Yesh Atid this week that their spokespeople were sending out in WhatsApp groups. I mean, you know, take the stuff to the TV, guys, you know. Give us some entertainment. So it's just really bizarre. And, of course, the man that everybody's watching now is Naftali Bennett, who barely crossed the threshold last elections. But this election could very much find himself in the position as the kingmaker, because it's where he takes his Yamina party, where he allocates his seats, where he decides to enter a coalition. That will be the determining factor, whether or not we can have a majority government or whether or not we prepare ourselves for election number five.
It's so interesting because he hasn't really traditionally performed well at the polls. There's always a high expectation around him, but somehow he just doesn't follow it through. Are you saying that there's a sense that this time for Naftali Bennett will be a little bit different?
Well, he's predicted, according to the latest polls, if you can believe polls, that he should have about 10 seats, which is a significant improvement on the last time. You know, the man that we've always referred to as a kingmaker was Avigdor Lieberman. Avigdor Lieberman putting his massive foot in his mouth again this week, saying that he's going to relegate the Haredim to a sinkhole or something like that. Probably not the smartest choice of words, and taking a lot of flack for that.
Sure.
But this time we have Naftali Bennett, and let's see, can he perform this time?
Yeah, well, next week this time we'll have a better indication around that. Tell us about Erdan and the IHRA.
Well, this is fascinating. Gilad Erdan, who's, you know, working double shift as our ambassador to the United States and also to the United Nations, he has launched a campaign to get the United Nations as a whole, as an institution, to adopt IHRA, which is the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism. And, you know, it lays out the clear parameters on what can be determined as anti-Semitic. And it does clearly state in there that criticism of Israeli policy is democratic, it's allowed. Where the line is saying that, you know, the Jewish people having no right to organize themselves politically and call ourselves Zionists, that's our you know, national liberation movement, that's our political movement, that and saying that Israel has no right to exist or questioning her sovereignty, that is where it becomes anti-Semitism. So IHRA lays out the clear parameters, and his rationale is that if the UN accepts IHRA, then it's various organizations, it's various different agencies within it, ECOSOC, UNICEF, various others, UNRWA, will be held to that standard. And he also says that if the United Nations accepts the definition, it could cut down on some of the incitement against Israel in the various bodies at the UN. And it might also help cut down on this obsessive tendency to put forward anti-Israel resolutions.
Happen for the UN to adopt such a policy? Is there any chance that they can, or is there does Israel need too much support?
I think it's going to be quite fascinating to see how this works moving ahead, because we do have some member states of the UN who have adopted IHRA. We've got cities now starting to adopt IHRA, London and Paris being two of those cities. You know, will a country like South Africa adopt IHRA? Probably not, given the political trajectory. But I don't think that Ambassador Erdan is going to think that this is going to happen anytime soon, but I think that he's taking an enormous stand to push, and he's really putting it a part of the debate and the discussion that, you know, if you're going to fulfill your original mandate, which is to protect human rights and the sanctity of human life and work against genocides and work against wars, then you're going to have to look at some of the ways that your institution behaves, and that's how some of your member states talk. And you know, we won't mention any names. Joe Biden, also sticking his foot in his mouth this week.
Yeah, repeatedly. It is 8 o'clock, Rolene Marks. Unfortunately, that is where we do have to leave it. Wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you next week.